everybody. Welcome back to the N-Express Nintendo Podcast. I am your interim host, Patrick Murphy. I almost forgot my name there for a second because I was thinking about what we're going to talk about, but we've got a good show lined up today. We've got a lot of things to talk about, what we've been playing. I know Rick's been playing some stuff. I've been playing some stuff. I'm assuming Isaac is playing some stuff. And we're also going to discuss Wii U ports to the Switch, as in which ones we'd like to have. And then last, we're going to round it out with some talk on the latest Indie Direct. Of course, let's get introductions out of the way. Joining me, as always, is Ricky D.
What's up, Patrick? You know what? I was thinking, in terms of nicknames, we should call you Hitchcock.
Hitchcock? I love Hitchcock. I wish I could be called Hitchcock. I would not do justice to that name. But he is my favorite filmmaker of all time. Yeah, I would love that. Isaac, what will we... Oh, joining us always, again, not always, but again, is Isaac Barnett.
Good to be here.
Isaac, what would your nickname be?
Well,
Tex.
Cowboy.
I'm not a cowboy. I mean, if you want to go cowboy, call me McCree, because it's who I play in Overwatch. But, yeah, other than that, I will usually go by Kane, because it's my middle name. So in online games, it's usually what my name is.
Kane. That sounds... that sounds... both biblical and Western in a way, because
and sinister.
You know, Cain was the main character from High Noon, so you know.
Yeah, I was also yeah.
Wait, didn't Cain kill Abel?
He did, but
that is correct.
My parents spun it in a positive direction because it also means something else. I forget what it is. I don't know if it's like hammer or something. I forget, but it all, besides brother murder, it also means something positive. That's what, he killed his brother, but.
A rock, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't say, but it's probably something like a rock or something.
All right. So, how you said you spent a lot of time playing video games? What games have you been playing, Rick?
Okay. Well, in terms of Nintendo games, so I had a really, really bad week. Not just because it's cold. I just had a bad week, and I was also somewhat sick. So I decided to go out and buy not one but two new Nintendo games. And whenever I'm feeling down, I like to play, you know. So I like to play original Nintendo IPs, specifically Mario. So I first bought Super Mario Party for the Nintendo Switch, which, by the way, is an amazing game. Well, maybe not amazing, but it's a great game. Well, maybe not great, but it's really good. Maybe great. It's good. It's great. I love it. has anyone played it?
I have not. I've been interested in it because, you know, I have a rather large family. We like to play the Switch a lot. So is it a fun party game? You enjoy
well,
it?
Well, and I think, Patrick, you played it. Now, here's the thing. There was two reasons why I didn't buy it at launch. Number one is because I was afraid I wouldn't have people to play with. And number two is because I was told you could only play the game with the Joy-Con. And so I was like, okay, that is sort of problematic because I have five sets of controllers. I have the Joy-Con or cons, like the Joy-Con, which equals
cons.
Two pieces.
Each one is a Joy-Con. So
yeah,
you have the Joy-Cons.
And two of them, the plural is Joy-Con. So one Joy-Con, two Joy-Con, right?
Because so when the
whatever.
Transformers like form a big robot, like when the what do you call them, the dinosaurs?
They don't combine though.
Oh no, it's the Constructicons.
Yeah, Constructicons combine to form
Voltron.
Devastator.
Combines.
Voltron combines and the Constructicons from G1 Transformers. You got other things like the aerial bots and stuff, but you know.
So when you combine a Joy-Con, sort of like those Transformer dudes, it would be a Joy-Con. Or Joy-Cons.
I think, isn't there a name for that when you put them, when you combine them into that one controller?
It's the Joy-Con grip.
The grip, yes, that's right.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay, anyhow, great show, guys. So,
A lot of weird tangents in this one, just going to warn everybody.
I was told you, well, it's true, it's a fact. You need to play with the Joy-Cons, not the Joy-Con grip, the Joy-Cons. Joy-Cons in order to play the game, right? And so the thing was like, I have all of these controllers, three of which are pro controllers. I have the GameCube controller and I have the Joy-Cons, which would form a Joy-Con grip, which comes with the Nintendo Switch when you buy the system. So I was like, I don't want to go out and buy an extra pair of Joy-Cons. So confusing.
We're going to consult Webster's Dictionary on this momentarily.
So yeah, so I was like, I didn't want to buy an extra pair, an extra controller or set of controllers, whatever, just to play this game with people. But anyhow, I went to Aaron's house. Aaron, former host of the Nintendo N-Express. I went to his daughter's.
Aaron Santos.
Yeah, I went to Aaron Santos, his daughter's birthday party. Anyways, he just bought the Switch, finally, after 2 years. He had Super Mario Party, so I played with him, and I fell in love with the game. So yes, you have to play with a Joy-Con. or Joy-Cons if you have more than one person. But okay, so like there is only four boards. I'm hoping they release some DLC. Of the four boards, there's one that's super short, but there is a twist in which, you know, you have, in order to win the game, you have to get the most stars. And in this specific board, the price of the stars changes. It varies from 5 to 10 to 15, depending on the roll of the dice. And you could buy up to 3 stars at one point. So, in a way, it's somewhat easier. In a way, it's also kind of harder, because you can buy up to 3 stars towards the end. But your opponent could also buy up to 3 stars. But the map is really small. But the other 3 maps are fantastic, specifically the island map, which splits into like 4 sections. And there's bridges that connect all 4 islands, and the bridges can be destroyed. So if the bridge is destroyed, then you're stuck on that specific part of the island, which could be problematic if you're trying to get a star, and a star is on the other island, and you can't get to it because there's no bridge or a warp pipe to get to that island. So that is my favorite map. I like the set of characters. Like, yeah, you get Waluigi and Wario and Mario and Luigi, etc., etc. What's great about the characters is everyone has their own set of special die, right? So you have the actual die, which goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. But each character has an additional die. And that die changes depending on the characters. For example, if you play with Luigi, you can get 1 or 1. It skips, like, 2 and 3. And you can get 4, 5, 6, and 7. So it'll replace, like, say, the number 2 and add a 7, but add an extra 1. So you have a higher chance of rolling a 1, but you also have a chance of rolling a 7. If you play with, I think it's Shy Guy, his die is like 1-1-1-4-4-4-4. So if you like really want a 4 and you're playing with Shy Guy, there's a really high chance you could score roll a 4 if you use a special die. So that's kind of cool. So like the characters sort of like have their advantages and disadvantages depending on their specific die. So but it's a Mario Party game and it's super fun, especially if you play with people. And the funny thing is, have you guys played Mario Party 10 for the Wii U?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so a lot of people do not like that game, and I get it. I actually like the game. I think the problem with Mario Party, Super Mario Party 10, is this? No, it's Mario Party 10.
This is Super Mario Party.
So the problem with Mario Party 10 is it was just very light in content. Like, there wasn't much to do in that game. Like, it had 4 boards, much like Super Mario Party, but it didn't have a lot of mini games and But the thing about that game is it actually looked beautiful. Like, I think that game actually looks better than this game. But at the end of the day, this is a Mario Party game. And so what's important is the amount of content you're given and how fun it is. And I think this game is really fun to play with people. And I think there's a lot to do. And there is this one challenge, which I think is called the River Challenge. And so you and your partners, you're on a raft and you're
rowing.
You're rowing. Is it rowing, though?
Yeah, you're rowing. Because you have oars.
Okay.
And you can go, you know, you're sitting on different sides of the raft. And, you know, if one person rows more, the raft will go in the opposite direction. You know, if you're on the left side and you're the one rowing, then the raft's going to go right.
Okay, because I remember right we side, got into a big, huge debate about this once on the podcast. The difference between being on, say, like a canoe and, say, a dragon boat and, in this case, like a raft. You know what I mean? Like, there's a difference between rowing and whatever. Anyhow, back this podcast is off the rails. So the point is you're on this river, you're rafting, you're rowing down the river. And as you're rowing down the river, you're trying to hit these specific, like, points. And if you hit them, you can play an additional mini game. So the whole point is to try to hit as many of those markers as possible to play these mini games. And when you play the mini games, you want to rack up as many points as possible. And this is, and there's different routes you can take, and you have to get to the very end. And I thought that was so, so fun. Katrina, when she was on the show, she was talking about it, and she said it was her favorite part of Super Mario Party, and I totally agree. But listen, if they release, and they should, if they release DLC for this game, I mean, buy it. Because there's already enough reason to buy it, especially if you have people to play with. Like, Patrick, you played it with your niece, I think.
My brother, yeah. It was fun. I liked it. We did the raft thing, which is cool. I mean, that goes on for a long time too, so you can definitely get your use out of that. It was a fun party game. That for a game like this, you do have to have people to play it. I will never buy it because I don't normally have people to play with. Like, I won't get enough time out of it if I bought it, but my brother has it, and if I go over there, then it's guaranteed there's two of us. And usually there's more people over there too, so Yeah, it was fun as a party game. As a single player game, obviously. It would be
well, here's the thing. I've actually been playing by myself. Like, I played with Aaron. I played with my nephew. And I played with my friend. But I played it by myself. I actually played it 3 times by myself. To the point where I made one game as long as I possibly could, which was 90 minutes. Or no, was it 90 minutes? Well, no. Sorry, no. It was 30 turns. Every character gets to roll the die 30 times, and the game lasted 2.5 hours.
Oh my God.
And you know what was so great? Okay, this was the best. Okay, this is the best. So we get to the very last turn, and I think I'm leading by 3 stars. Okay, and all of a sudden Daisy, on her last turn, she gets an additional 2 stars. And then she steals one of my stars, which therefore puts her tied with me. So now we're tied, and I think she had 2 more coins, right? So the way it works is that you win based on the amount of stars you get, and then the coins are used for a tiebreaker. Now, of course, coins are important because you need coins to buy stars. But at the end of the game, the person has the most coins, if there's a tiebreaker, would win the match, right? But there's also a bonus round. So at the end of the game, they will award specific characters extra stars for whatever reason. It's always random. It could be like, I don't know, the amount of times you land on a lucky space, right? And so they were awarding these extra stars. I got one, Daisy got one, and then she got the last star. And I was so pissed off because there's specific squares that you can land on. And when you land on that square, you can get a teammate. And here's the beautiful thing about this. So, like, if you land on, say I'm playing with Luigi. In that case, I was playing with Luigi. So I land on a specific square and I get an additional teammate, and it's random. So the computer randomly decides which teammate you're going to get. So it could be Waluigi, it could be Goomba, whatever. I ended up getting Mario. And then what happens is when you roll the die, you will roll, say, like a 6. And then Mario will also roll a die, and he can roll like a 2. So we'll give you an extra 2, since instead of advancing only 6 spaces, you would advance 8 spaces. See what I'm saying here? And in that turn, this was like so epic. In that final turn, she ended up getting 3 stars, and I was 1 square away from getting an additional star. And at the end of this whole entire like match, I ended up losing by 1 star because she got a bonus star. It was pretty epic, I gotta admit.
I'm not sure I would have ever turned that game on again.
Yeah, same. No way. 2.5 hours.
Yeah, but the thing is, we talked about this a while back. Like, Nintendo announced that they would have a lot of like these board games coming to the Switch, like very, very popular board games. And I love virtual board games. My brother is a huge tabletop gamer, and he hates me for saying this because like he would prefer to just play board games sitting around the table, which I agree with. I love. But at the same time, I also like the idea of playing these virtual board games, especially on Nintendo Switch, when you can play online or on the go. Because at work we have a Switch, but they do not have Super Mario Party. So I can bring my Switch to work and we can play Super Mario Party. And because the Switch already comes with 2 Joy-Cons, so confusing, I've already got 2 controllers. Now, the only problem is, because I like this game so much, I do want to buy an extra set of Joy-Cons or Con. Can someone please let me know if it's Joy-Con or Cons? Because
an S behind it. I think it's Joy-Cons.
Yeah. So anyways, when you're playing the game, like, you know, within the actual board game, of course, there's mini games that you can play. And the mini games can be a scenario in which everyone plays by themselves, right? It's all for one. Or it could be like 3 versus 1. Or it could be 2 versus 2. And some of the mini games are super, super fun. The thing is, though, after playing about 6 times, I felt that a lot of the mini games were repeating. So I can use a few more mini games if possible. But it's a ton of fun to play. I highly, highly recommend it. If you are a fan of the series, if you just love Nintendo in general, really love this game.
Yeah, I think we've got positive impressions from most people that have, to varying degrees, of course. And I think it all depends, though, on how many people you get to play with. I think if you're playing with people, that random aspect is not nearly as frustrating. It could become a source of fun because, you know, there's some, you know, fake outrage that can happen. You can really get into it with your friends. I think that's the same thing that happens in the rubber banding in Mario Kart. You know, it's a lot more fun when it's happening with people that you're playing next to than if you're just playing online or by yourself.
Yeah, but I like the fact that the mini games are important. Like, they actually really matter, because you need to actually win the mini games to collect coins in order to buy stars or buy anything, like buy items, like a dash mushroom. So you can have a mushroom to rely on in case you have to advance an extra three spaces. So, yeah, love this game.
Now, did you spend more time playing that, or did you spend some time playing Super Mario, New Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe, or whatever it's called? Yeah.
I spent more time playing River Survival. Yeah, and just to be clear, there is so much to do. Like I haven't even played all of the games yet, because it starts with this hub, you know? It's got like, it's a hub, like whatever, it's just a hub, right? And so like the game starts you off in this hub and you walk around and you can decide what it is you want to play. And I haven't even yet had a chance to explore everything. Right. And as you continue playing, it unlocks specific like extra features and mini games, etc. Except there's a dance competition. It was so much fun.
I'd have to pass on that.
Oh, it was so fun. It was like Just Dance, but the Super Mario Party version. Really good music too.
Did you play any of Deluxe then?
Okay, so yeah, I think we've all played New Super Mario Brothers, Luigi, Mario Plus, Luigi Super Extra Deluxe Edition, specifically for the Nintendo Switch. Let's drop the new.
And Knuckles.
Yeah. I don't even know what the name of this game is. I just bought it. And I actually own the version for the Wii U.
Yeah.
And on the Wii U, they actually released New Super Luigi Wii U, I think it's called.
New Super Luigi U, yeah.
So that was released separately. Well, when I initially bought the Wii U way back, whenever it was, way back in the day, kids, it was being sold separately, and later they released it as a double pack, I think, or two for one.
Yeah, okay, the version I had, so I got my Wii U in September of 2014, and it came packaged with Luigi U and Mario U, so they just put it on one disc after a while, but before that it was standalone, sold on shelves, and standalone DLC as well.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it was the launch game, right, for the Wii U?
Yes, it was. Yes. And that's why I got a lot of people salty, because they were like, you know, it was the second New Super Mario Brothers game of that year in 2012. And in a lot of ways, it looks like New Super Mario Brothers Wii, you know, just up-res to HD. So, yeah, it was the reason that was a launch title got a lot of people salty. So,
I don't blame them. I mean, I didn't get the Wii U at launch. It was the one Nintendo console I did not get year one. Not to say I get every single Nintendo console on launch, but I think I have, except for the NES, because I was too young to buy a console at the time. But yeah, I think the Wii U is the only console I did not get year one. I got a year two. And anyhow, I could understand why people were salty about it. But the thing about this game, though, it's actually a really, really, really good game.
Yeah,
I wouldn't go so far as to say it's one of the best games in the Mario series. We were talking about this last week. You weren't on the show, but Kyle was saying that he mentioned this article written over at Polygon last year.
Yeah.
And the writer put it at the top of the list, and I was like, okay, you're on crack. But I mean, I respect the writer because he wrote such an amazing piece and defended his opinion, but I was just like, I do not agree that it is the best Mario game ever. But it's a really good game. I think it's got great level design. And I mean, you can play up to four people, which
never recommend that. That's terrible.
Well, actually, it depends. It actually can make it a lot more fun because it makes the game more difficult.
I would not recommend it on this version because you don't have the ability to put down blocks to mess up other people, which was a great feature in the Wii U version, is you could use the tablet, you know, the gamepad, to just place these blocks and block people from jumping.
that was absolutely brutal.
That was so much fun. Oh, my gosh.
I haven't had a chance to play multiplayer on that. But have you played the game? The new one.
No, I have not played the new one. I watched Digital Foundry's piece on the tech aspects of it because I kind of like stuff like that. But no, I'm 100% it when I had it on Wii U. And it kind of seems a stiff price for, you know, $60 for both of those. And I play both of them. I played Luigi U and Mario U. I love both of them. But I don't see the point in, you know, rebuying it on Switch, honestly.
No, but for people that haven't played them, I think that's
considering it's $40 on Wii U, no matter what, you know, used, I think 60 is not too bad. It was just too much for me personally.
But for me, like, okay, like the thing is, I've talked about this so many times on the podcast. Nintendo games are not cheap here in Canada, in Montreal. Every first party Nintendo game, when it first releases, is exactly $92 and I think 62 cents with tax. Okay. The thing is, this game, to me, I justify the cost because even though I already own it, I've already put in maybe 10 hours into this game. You know, we've talked about this before. If you go to a movie and you sit down in the theater for like 2 hours and you paid whatever it is, like $15 to $20 to see a movie, you've already spent up to $20 to see a movie to sit down for 2 hours. So like if I'm going to put in like 30 hours into this game, I mean, it's still pricey, but I can afford it. At least right now I can. So yeah, I play. But this version has a new character, Nabbit. And Toadette wasn't in the original, was it?
No,
Toadette and Peachette were not. And Nabbit's only in Luigi U as well.
Exactly. So yeah. the thing about Toadette and Nabbit is they make the game easier to play to the point where Nabbit cannot get hurt or touched. The only way you can die with Nabbit is if you fall into like a pit, right? So if you're playing with Nabbit, no one can touch you. It's basically like beyond cheating. It's pointless and it's boring. I don't even understand why. But if you're playing multiplayer and someone picks Nabbit, they can steal all of your powers. So if you get like a power, they can steal your power. So that's pretty cool, I guess. But it's still pretty. I was still assuming that it would be boring for your partner who's playing with a character who can't actually die, unless, well, he can die, but he can't get hurt by enemies. It's kind of like pointless.
That's when you pick him up and throw him in the pit. So
yes, exactly.
Yeah, my favorite level in this game, maybe you guys disagree, but it's the haunted ghost ship. I just love that level, and I think it's the one I had the most trouble completing. But do you guys think this game is hard? Because a lot of people say it's hard, and I do not find it hard at all. I find it really easy, actually.
No, I mean, if you're going for the coins and for the star coins, it can be a little challenging. But I 100% of the game back when I was a lot worse at platformers. So I mean, I didn't think that was that hard. Now Luigi U is much harder. But it's also, I like it a lot better in terms of it's a lot more original and everything. But no, I didn't think the game was hard, you know, that hard at least.
Well, the new Super Mario Luigi U version, whatever you call it, it has a brutal time limit.
Yeah, the 100 seconds.
Yeah. Yep.
So unless you play Peachette or Toadette, and it's 200 seconds.
Is that right?
Yes.
But why would you not play with Luigi on a game that's named after Luigi? Come on, guys.
don't know.
Well, isn't it designed for his jump, too? I mean, that's kind
yes.
of...
Yes, it has this.
I think that's what I like about the game, because I've always been a huge fan of Luigi. I think the very first podcast we ever recorded, and I had never met Tim in real life, and I think I creeped him out because I said, like, Luigi was hot or something. He's, like, the hottest Nintendo character ever, and he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, he's one of my favorite video game characters of all time. He does not get enough respect. We need a year of Luigi again. I don't care what anyone says. Shut up. We need it. Which, you know, could have been this year to some degree.
Well, he's got Luigi's Mansion coming out next year. So yeah. If there's going to be
year.
A year of Luigi.
This year, dude.
Or this year. What am I talking about? It's 2019. All right. I know where I am. Yeah, this would be a good year for it because of, you know, new Super Luigi U and Luigi's Mansion and who knows what else, what other surprises. But we already had the year of Luigi, Rick. Gone. It's too late.
Later in the show. Yeah, later in the show we're gonna talk about what Wii U games we want to see ported to the Switch with a twist. We'll get to that later, but I want to know what you guys have been playing.
Isaac, what have you been up to?
So there's recently a big sale at Target on these 3DS games. And so I got my 3DS, I guess you should say towards the middle of the console's lifespan, I think 2 years after launch. It's 2013. So I missed out on a lot of those first little titles. And I just didn't really focus on playing my 3DS for a while. So I went through and picked up a...
You guys have Target?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't actually buy it at Target. I got the Best Buy to price match it.
In Montreal, they have Target, though.
No, we had Target, but it went bankrupt.
Oh, yeah, Target Canada. I remember that. Oh,
Target
yeah.
is a Minnesota corporation that's based here.
Yeah.
Like half the state works for Target some capacity.
So I got a bunch of games for cheap. I think I got Ocarina of Time 3D for $5. I got Link Between Worlds for $5. Brand new sealed. I got 3D Land $5 sealed. And I got New Leaf for my sister. She likes Animal Crossing, so I got that for her $5 sealed. So I've been playing through some of those. I also got Donkey Kong Country 3D on 3DS. Returns. So Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D on 3DS on a sale on Amazon.
Okay, we reviewed the game. We reviewed all the Donkey Kong games last year on the podcast. And when we talked about that game, what we never mentioned is that if you buy the 3DS version, it's by far the superior version, even if it's on the smaller handheld console, because the controls are just so much better. And that is one of my favorite games of all time.
So I've played both versions, and I've also played Tropical Freeze. About this game, it is so evident how much of an upgrade Tropical Freeze is over this, and not in terms of the graphics, just in terms of game design. And I watched a really excellent series of YouTube videos by a YouTuber called The Geek Critique. He does some really good analysis of Nintendo games. And he was pointing out that basically Returns just shows how much they grew between, you know, Returns and Tropical Freeze. And it's just so evident, not even in terms of, like I said, the graphics, but the game design is so much better. Returns just feels kind of weird. It's also where it's cramped on the 3DS, a small screen. It's kind of a little hard to play. But I have played the Wii version, and the waggle was kind of getting on my nerves. It's kind of why I picked this version.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. And like as much as I love the Wii version, I mean, we could talk about this later again, too, because it's going to pop up again in the next topic. But I've always had a problem with the Wii in terms of like the controls. As much as I love Super Mario Galaxy, and that control, the Wii mote was amazing when playing a game like that. But I've been saying for years that Tropical Freeze was one of the best games released that year and should have been nominated as Game of the Year in every single publication, every single award show, which it was not. It was snubbed, and I think that game is freaking amazing.
Yeah, it really is, and this game's good. This gets a good platformer. The 30 FPS kind of hurts it as a platformer because it's on 3DS. They had to bump some stuff down. But overall, I'm enjoying it so far. Like I said, I also picked up another game. It's Super Mario 3D Land. I played through it before, almost 100%. I think it got 99% on it or something. Playing through it again, I love that game. So I'm a big fan of 3D World. I think I mentioned this before. I wrote an article about it a while back. But 3D Land is also one of my favorite games. It's just so much fun. It's got such a creative design to it. I think it was overlooked when it was released. It helped save the 3DS to some degrees, but I think it's been overshadowed since then. I just love it. And it's a great game to go back and play every few years. And I sold my copy a while back because I sell games when I'm done with them. So this was good to get back and play it again.
Why would you sell your games? You're going to want to play them again.
So I'm looking at my shelf right now, and I think I have 10 games on there. And 5 of those are from my childhood. So I rotate my games out. I use the money from the games I sell to put into more games so I can use my other money for other things. Because when I collected for a long time, and then I realized that I wasn't doing anything with those games. I wouldn't play a game for 3 years. I'm like, why am I keeping this? It's worth like $60. I put the $60 to it, get another game I want to play. And so usually what I do is basically, if it's a new Nintendo game comes out, I'll buy it at launch for the discounted price I get on Amazon, play it, beat it, and then sell it again. So I did that with like Star Allies earlier this year, right? Like, I'm never going to play that game again. It was great. It was fun. But it was in no way was it worth what I paid for it. That's why
I
wouldn't.
See, I get it. I get it. Like, you know, if you need the money and you want to buy an extra game, then it totally makes sense. Like, sell your game and buy a new game. So it gives you an opportunity to play that game, which you cannot play if you do not have the money. But the reason why I like to actually buy physical copies, and not just of games, I actually have a huge DVD collection of over 2,000 DVDs and Blu-rays. By the way, most of which I got for about $2 to $5. But the point is, like, I get them for really, really cheap. But the point is that I was actually thinking about selling my DVD Blu-ray collection back in December. Or was it November? I don't know. It was like last year. And I was talking to our good friend, Simon Howell, who helped us launch Goomba Stomp, the website. And I was telling Simon, hey, like, you know, I'm thinking about selling these DVDs and Blu-rays. Have you ever tried like Marketplace on Facebook? I hear it's a good, great platform to sell your stuff. And he's like, if I were you, I would keep it.
And they're not really worth anything anymore.
Well, no.
No. So, Blu-rays and DVDs aren't worth anything.
Actually, it's not true because Edgar Chaput, a very good friend of ours, who used to write for us, he sold his entire collection within a day of Blu-rays and DVDs and got so much money for them. So here's the thing. So that very day when I told Simon this, that very day, they announced that the streaming service in the United States, and I forget what it's called because we do not have it in Canada.
Filmstruck,
yes.
Okay.
Filmstruck was closing. And so the thing is, like, as much as I love Netflix, you know, like, I like the idea of being able to watch something like, I don't know, something good, like, say, Black Mirror, for example, or anything, and not always have to leave my house and go to the cinema, especially when it's, like, minus 40 outside. So I like having the option, right? But Netflix doesn't really have any of the classics. I don't think there's anything on Netflix that's older than, say, like, the year 2000.
Few.
Right.
Very few. Every now and again, like they'll have The Third Man, Orson Welles, you know, movie on there, or Touch of Evil, but it's very rare, and they're
exactly.
Usually still cool classics.
So the point is, I have, like, my DVD collection, I don't necessarily buy a really popular mainstream movie. Like, I might have, you know, one Mission Impossible film, like the first one, because I really love it or something, but you know what I mean? I try to buy films that are hard to find. So, like, I'm looking at my collection right now, and I have, like, an incredible foreign language film collection from, like, movies that you just can't find anywhere anymore, and especially because there's no more video stores. So the whole point of this, I'm rambling today, guys, I'm sorry. The whole point of this is that eventually it's going to be hard to find a place to play these games or watch these movies. And so I've just come to the conclusion I actually do want to keep it. Like, the whole point of having a collection is to collect it just in case one day, you know, you want to watch the movie again or play the game again. But I also have a habit of lending my movies out to friends. And I'm very, very strict on this. I make sure I get my copies back and my games too. And actually at work, I will bring in movies and like, I'm like, okay, I'm going to recommend a movie for you guys this week or a few. And here's what I'm going to give to you. And here's what I'm going to give to you. I've been doing this for years. So yeah, I get it. I get it. The point is I try not to sell anything that I love. Like, I would never sell a copy of Ocarina of Time.
That's the thing though. Like, I sold my favorite game of all time is Xenoblade because I hadn't played it in 2 years. And so I looked down, and I actually got burned on that game because I bought it at launch for $50. You remember, it used to be rare, right, for a long time. It was $120. Yeah. I didn't sell it then. And the crazy thing is, by the time I finished it, it was like 2013. The final time I played it a lot was like in 2013. From the time I finished it then until the time I sold it, I didn't play it more than 5 hours. And so I ended up selling it for like $40. And if I would have sold it at the peak price, which is already after I'd finished the game, I could have sold it for $100 easy. So I ended up losing out on $60 just to not play a game for 3 years.
It all depends on whether or not you think you're going to use these things again. Oh, yeah, if you never like, are, I know when I'm not going to play a game again. Smash. Yeah, exactly. That didn't last more than a weekend. But with Kirby Star Allies, I beat it, and I knew I would never pick it up again. It wasn't a classic that I wanted to ever go back to. I just didn't need to. It was done. Versus some games, like, I kept Super Mario 3D World. Now, I haven't played it in a while. I haven't turned on my Wii U in a while. But there may be a day when I go back to that, because while I was still playing my Wii U, I would occasionally pop it back in just to play a level or two, just because it's such a great game. And I kept my Wind Waker HD and my Twilight Princess HD. I tend to keep Zelda games. I still have Link Between Worlds for 3DS and Ocarina of Time for 3DS. There are certain games, just like, I don't know why, Resident Evil Revelations for 3DS. I have played that game multiple times and I've hung on to it because I think it's a really, really great game. But most of the time with games, I'm not going to go back and replay them quite as much. Yep. Maybe indie games because they're shorter. With movies, it's different. I do have a big DVD collection because I will rewatch movies.
But it's not as time consuming though, right? With video games, for me, my biggest loss is my GameCube collection because I think they stole it, but my nephews, apparently, they say I gave them my GameCube. I never remember giving my GameCube to my nephews. So I gave them my GameCube. They somehow lost most of the games, and they broke my GameCube.
Well, that hurts.
I've never had a Nintendo console break down on me, and I still have the GameCube. It is on my shelf. I have this in my video game room. On the shelf is the GameCube. It does not work. And so how long have we talked about me wanting to play Luigi's Mansion again, like since we started the podcast? Finally, they re-released it.
Yeah,
on the
3DS. Yeah.
Yeah, but nobody likes the version better.
No.
Well, you have a Wii, don't you? You have a Wii. You could just play it on that.
No, I don't have a Wii anymore.
You don't have a Wii?
My ex took the Wii. Long story. In the divorce.
Those are super cheap. So that's like $20, right? And they have way better video quality than a GameCube.
I actually thought about getting a Wii. But the thing is, most of my Wii games, I have all of my Wii games. I just don't have the Wii. Plus, Wii games you can play on the Wii U. You just can't play the GameCube games on the Wii U.
You can play GameCube games on the Wii U if you mod it, right?
If you mod it. I'm not going to mod
it. If you CFW mod it, you can play GameCube games on the Wii U.
But you can pick up a cheap Wii and you can basically have a GameCube.
And the Wii is so easy to hack. You can just rip all your games to like a hard drive and then just play it directly from that. I mean,
that's the controller plugs right in, so it's not really a big deal. The GameCube, honestly, other than for its kind of nostalgia and aesthetic value, it is completely useless because the Wii will do everything that the GameCube.
Except for one thing, and that is the Game Boy Player adapter. So if you ever want to play Game Boy Player games. Yeah, if you want to play Game Boy games on a big screen, that's the only thing. But nobody, honestly, I would probably be one of the few people that would do that. Most people would just go online, download the ROM, and play it somewhere else.
All right, so last week I was talking about playing Hollow Knight. That game is absolutely amazing. That has turned into one of my favorite games of all time. I just recently beat Hollow Knight. I put 45 hours into a Metroid-type game, which is unthinkable under normal circumstances for me. But I was so engrossed in this game, I considered it's going to be up there among my favorite games of all time. Seriously, I think Hollow Knight is amazing. I'm going to put it up there with Super Metroid as one of the best Metroid games. Yes, I think it's absolutely just, it's not flawless. So Super Metroid's going to get the top because I think there's nothing wrong with that game. Whereas Hollow Knight, I think it's maybe a little too open-ended for its own good in some ways. It could frustrate some people just because you can really wander and expose a lot of the map pretty early on and encounter bosses that you will not be prepared to fight unless you're really, really good at, you know, twitch reflex, you know, platforming. So, but other than that, I think the challenge is just barely walks the line between being, it's not an easy game. It's a hard game, but they also give you so many options with charms to build your character out that you can play, you know, any style that you want. And if you want to go in and face tank a boss later that you couldn't beat early in the game, you can face tank them later with some charms. Pretty much almost everything you can figure out a way. There may be one or two exceptions, but I didn't really have a problem with those. I just find the atmosphere engrossing. The attention to detail is just, it's on a level that Nintendo, I always praise them for. Their attention to detail, that is found in Hollow Knight. I rarely see that attention to detail in any other developer. And yet these people did it. Just every little thing, little animations, little touches sprinkled everywhere in this amazing world. The level design is fantastic. It's everything that I would want in a Metroid-type game. I think it's, you know, other than it being maybe a little too open-ended, I think it's pretty much near perfect.
You've been raving about this game for about 3 to 4 weeks now. So
the first time I tried it, I played it for about 5 hours and I hit a roadblock, one of the bosses. Couldn't beat it. Tried 15 times and there were other games coming out. I was like, well, I really admire this game. I admire the craft behind it. I could sense that it was really, really lovingly crafted, but I just couldn't get to it. But I was always kind of drawn back to it. Every time I had a gap in games, I was like, man, should I go restart my file on Hollow Knight? But it's a game where you got to be in a rhythm. You got to really know what you're doing. You have to be playing it fairly consistently so that your skills are high enough, because as the game progresses, things do get pretty hard. Even though you can face tank some bosses, it's got to be a skilled face tanking in many ways. Like, you still got to be aware of what you're doing. And there's some tough platforming segments that really take some concentration if you want to play through the whole thing. So I eventually just decided to restart the entire game from the beginning. It was after I played Iconoclast, which I did not care for at all.
It's funny because we're talking about all these indie games, and we're going to talk about the Nindies Direct later in the show, the one that was streamed earlier today. And at the end of that Direct, they show off all of these great indie games that were released last year and the year before. And yeah. I realized that there's so many I still have not yet had time to play. And I actually own some of them, like Undertale, which I still have not yet played. I have the special edition box set from Fangamer. Still have not yet played it. There's so many great games to play. The thing is, the Switch turns officially 2 in March, I think on March 7th, and every year we publish a list of the best games released on the Switch of the year, of the anniversary, right? So I want to try to play as many of these games before March 7th, and Hollow Knight is one of those games on my list.
I can't say enough good things about it. And I don't want to rave about it forever because it is an older game. It came out, you know, I think in April of last year. So it's been around for a while. I just was a little late to the game and we never really talked about it too much. I know we had Max on to talk about it once, but other than that, none of us really played it. I loved it. I'm going to still put a little more time into it. I've got 106% right now, and if that sounds weird, it's because there's been DLC. So you could originally 100% the game, but then they added DLC, and so now I think you can get up to 112%. And there's more DLC coming, which I will absolutely buy. But the other DLC was all included with the original download. It's only $15 too, and I've put 45 hours in this thing, and it's not 45 hours of filler. That's the crazy thing. When you're 100% in this game, it's also meaningful. Everything you're acquiring is meaningful and can help you. And that is also very rare in a game that you would play that long. There, nothing here seems like filler. And that to me is absolutely incredible for four indie developers who made a $15 game. It's unbelievable.
I actually want to buy Salt and Sanctuary for you to play. I would be willing to put down the money and buy the game for you. Because the thing about that game is it's really, really tough. We reviewed the game. I think Mike and I spent 45 minutes reviewing the game way back. So just look through the archive of the NXpress podcast if you want to hear the review. It is one of my favorite games of all time. It is probably my second favorite game, period, released on the Nintendo Switch. It's a Metroidvania-style game also, but in the vein of, like, Dark Souls. And I hate using the comparison to Dark Souls because then people get turned off because they're like, oh, the game's going to be, like, too tough. It is kind of tough, but when you talk about Hollow Knight, I feel like your experience with Hollow Knight was similar to the way I felt playing Salt and Sanctuary.
I remember your review on that, and that was the, you, and I remember you liked it quite a bit. So, I mean, that's a game that I've certainly looked at in trailers, you know, and stuff like that, and thought maybe I should pick this up. You know, I've kind of wondered. Let's put it that way.
Oh, so good, so good. I thought you were going to rave about a different indie game that got released this week, which right, I hear so is like the word on the street is it's the bee's knees. It's the greatest thing since Citizen Kane.
All right, so I also bought Travis Strikes Again, which is the new No More Heroes game. It's sort of a spinoff from Suda51, who's supposed to be this like punk rock star, you know, game developer, super creative guy. And if you play No More Heroes or any of his other games like Lollipop Chainsaw and all these, or, you know, even back when he was with Capcom, when he did Killer 7, I think that was his. And, you know, he's a really weird guy, really weird sense of story and sense of humor. And he does a lot of meta stuff and, you know, whatever. He's supposed to be really creative. This is about Travis Strikes Again is, got a cool concept behind it. It's this, you know, that this idea that Travis Touchdown, the main character from No More Heroes, goes into a video game console or into different video games, I should say, and these are supposed to sort of riff on indie games, and he plays through their levels and blah blah blah, and he has to fight some boss at the end, and it's kind of all very meta, and he goes in there with Batman. You can play this co-op, even though I've been just doing single player. In actuality, Suda51 never does a single creative thing with any of this. He doesn't affect the gameplay at all. It's just a top-down and occasionally side-scrolling hack-and-slash game that does absolutely nothing new. It's got bland combat. It's got bland level design. It's got bland art direction. It's got bland visuals. It's got absolutely mediocre everything. There's not a single thing about this game that stands out as being creative in any way. And to me, it kind of feels like a cheap joke. The whole game feels cheap to me, to tell you the truth. But
It honestly ways didn't look good at all, like, from the very start. But the reason why I was excited, because I love No More Heroes, like, 1 and 2. And it's the same character, and it's Suda51. But the thing is, it never really looked good. I like the concept, like, the premise behind it, and the whole thing about it being meta and having these characters from different, like, indie games, like the character from Dead Cells, or at least, like, references to these characters, and the idea of it taking place in sort of like this universe that is reminiscent to the 16-bit and 8-bit era, and all of that sounds great on paper, but the thing is, it doesn't necessarily make for a fun game. And I actually listened to Jim Sterling's review of it, and he was trying to be as polite as possible, but basically saying the game is just boring as shit. And then I saw IGN's video review, and they just hated the game. And then everyone I know who I would say I sort of like respect in terms of like them being an actual good game critic pretty much says this game is not fun. Like, that's the whole problem with the game. And
there's nothing to do, Rick. That's the problem. You're doing it's well, okay, hack and slashes can be cathartic at times. That's fine. But one of the big problems with this game is it doesn't control all that well. I don't feel like the controls are tight. Sometimes I'll hit my heavy attack and it'll give me two when I don't want one, and it'll put me in a bad position where I'm going to get hit. In this game, you're going to get hit a lot. There's a dodge button that sometimes will dodge twice when you only push the button once, and it puts you in an area of the map that you didn't want to be in the first place. It just doesn't feel very good. And the impact that you have when you hit people also isn't very good. It doesn't feel tangible in any way. So you don't get that satisfaction from mowing people down, really. So there's really nothing here. I mean, boring is a great way to describe it. I've had to force myself. I've played through almost half of it, I think, at this point. And I've had to force myself to do that. And there's just not a lot of things inspiring me to go back to it. And like I said, this is a $40 game if you buy it physically, and it's a $30 game digitally. I mean, this feels more like a $10 game. It feels cheap, like a $10 game from an uninspired indie developer. This, nothing suggests Suda51 except for the cutscenes, which aren't really fully animated anyway. They all kind of, you know, reflect maybe some Apple IIe or Commodore 64 type video games, but it's mostly just text. And even though he's making jokes about how much text it is, like, after a while, it's just not funny anymore.
Well, you know what the whole point of the game is, and it's not to say that he and his team didn't try hard to put their heart and passion and creativity into the game and actually try to make a game that's fun to play, but it's essentially a tech demo. They wanted to make a game on the cheap in hopes that if it had a good reception, if it sold well, they would get the funding to actually make No More Heroes 3.
Okay, but here's my problem. They didn't sell it for on the cheap. If you're going to make games on the cheap, then you sell it on the cheap. That's why this game feels like a ripoff to me. Like, $40 for this game? No freaking way. This feels like a $10 game at best. There's not much in there,
wait,
honestly. Like, this
40?
Is as basic.
40?
If you want to buy this game, it's $40 for the physical and $30 for the digital.
So you're telling me that if I go buy the game here in Montreal, it's going to cost me $92? That's insane.
No, because games here are $60. Like
oh,
a Nintendo
okay,
game
sorry,
60,
right.
So it's going to be less than that, but it's still going to be expensive. Like that's, I expect a certain level of quality even out of a $40 game, and I feel like this is. I mean, you have to see the visuals in this thing.
I've seen it. I've seen.
I'm
gameplay
not
going to
know. I don't know what's inside their heads or their hearts when they're making this game. But if they had passion, none of it shows. None of it. It is about as boring design as it could be. Maybe they have passion and they have no talent. That's also a possibility.
Hey man, I warned you. Remember?
I don't know, but this game is like I say, it's about as mediocre as you can possibly get. And if they want funding, like I would be very worried about a No More Heroes 3 just based on this. If this is what happens when Suda 51 returns to the director's chair, like there's nothing in this game that's wacky. Nothing. Like he does his stupid humor, you know, sometimes, which you may find entertaining and you may not. I'm hit and miss on it. Sometimes I like it. Sometimes I think it's stupid. But he doesn't put any of that into the actual game. And so, yeah, you get these cutscenes in between the six worlds or whatever that you get to explore, but that's very little actual time spent for six cutscenes. I mean, that's the wackiness. The rest of the game is so mundane as to I don't even know.
Sounds like to me, you would rather have this game been just absolutely terrible, right, than just mediocre. The mediocre is what hurts about it.
Yeah, right? Because I can actually play through it. Like, it's mindless, yeah. And I am forcing myself a little bit to play through it, but it's not frustrating. It's just blah.
That is frustrating. Like, I talked about this several times over the past, like, five episodes. In this day and age, 2019, when there are hundreds, thousands of games released per year, a six doesn't cut it anymore. Like I mean, nope. I could be spending my time playing a way better game because this is my time. It's not even about the money you put in. Like, forget about the $40. It's about the time. I could be spending that time playing Salt and Sanctuary, yeah. Hollow Knight, whatever, Undertale, Super Mario Party, anything.
I mean, yeah. I've gone back to Hollow Knight while playing this just to do stupid little piddly things because playing in that world is just generally more fun than doing anything in this brand new game that I have. So I will beat Travis, I'm sure, and then I will immediately sell it and it'll cost me $20 instead of the $40, which is fine. Lesson learned, right? Sometimes playing video games, you learn a lesson. Yeah. It is important, I think, to experiment. Like I bought Starlink and raved about that game, right? Not that I think it's the greatest game of all time, but I experimented with that game and I ended up sinking 50 hours plus hours into it. Loved it.
Here's your negative side of that, right? You know, you had a great time with that
game.
Right.
Exactly. So, you know, they can't all be winners, man, but I do think it's important to experiment. I think in this particular case, I got bit. And that's fine. Lesson learned.
But the thing is what I do not understand, and we've talked about it so many times, and we really got to move on. But it's like when you make a game, okay, forget about the artistic side of you. At the end of the day, it's a game, and it's got to be fun to play. Like there's different types of game. Like I still have not yet played Grizz. I know you're not a fan, Patrick. Some people say it's great. Some people say they're not a big fan like of the game for the same reasons you don't like it.
That one is fun when you're actually getting to play it, which is, you know, whatever, very... That's 2 out of the 3 hours you're actually playing the game. So I looked, my Switch says 3 hours I played that game, and I did everything that
hey,
I
man,
could.
I think Inside is one of the three best games on the Nintendo Switch, and I'm putting it up there with games like Breath of the Wild. Inside is incredible. I wrote this whole like essay about it, and it took me 2.5 hours to finish the game. So
yeah, look,
that's
if you're
fine.
Into, but you know me, I'm not into story. I'm not affected by gaming stories at all. So they're just not for me. And I'm not down, like, if you're into gaming stories, you may want to check out Grease. And I wrote that in my review for Grease. But if you're just into gameplay, Grease is not enough. Like, it's fun when you're actually getting to play, but there's just a lot in there that, you know, I didn't give it a bad review. I gave it like a 7 because that's what I think a game that you play 2 out of the 3 hours that it takes you. Like,
yeah, it sounds like the type of game you would want to watch somebody else play, right?
Yeah.
Not spend your money on it.
actually, I wouldn't spend your money because I think it's $20. I think.
Oh my gosh, for a 3-hour game.
Yeah. So like there, you're not necessarily getting the amount of entertainment that you would from a movie, like the dollar value. But anyway, I would highly advise anybody, unless you're diehard fans of No More Heroes, and I mean diehard of like Suda51's humor, and you simply must get all the references that he makes and find all the Easter eggs for No More Heroes. I would steer clear of this one. Your money is much better spent elsewhere. And I can't believe, I have to believe Nintendo's people were looking at this game thinking, oh my God, this is what we thought was going to be so special that we had during our Switch announcement event. And we had him come out on stage and say that he was making a new Nora Heroes game. Like, oh my God, this is what the result was. This is kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, because I remember that event. He went off script and like threw the poor translator all off.
Yeah. And that was supposed to be a big deal. And it was a big deal that he wasn't getting invited out. It was cool that maybe they were going to bring No More Heroes. Well, I'm just going to be very wary of anything this guy does from here on out, because he just coasted on this one. Anyway.
So we are 55 minutes into the show. We're off the rails today. And I still have not yet I have not yet read our iTunes reviews, which we should have done at the beginning of the show, and we still have to do the main event. So before we get to the main event, guys, I'm not going to read them all. I'm just going to read one new one by Pocket Muncher. Love the name Pocket Muncher from the UK. It seems like most of our listeners, I would say most, come from the UK or live in the UK.
Right in anyway, yeah.
Yeah. So he left a review on iTunes, basically very short, sweet, and to the point. He says, fun, informative, entertaining, one of the best podcasts. So thank you so much. If you do like our show and you want to support us, leave us a review on iTunes and visit our website, goombastomp.com.
Yeah, thanks for any reviews that come through. I hope we can be entertaining, is I think the most important of all of those. Well, and fun. But, you know, we try to inform as much as we can, but, you know, we're stupid people too, so who knows what we get right. I'm sure there'll be people out there who love Travis Strikes Again and you know, will listen to me and think that I'm crazy. Anyway, but we should probably move on and get to our main event. Hopefully these will be shorter events than this first one, maybe not quite so many.
The main event is shorter than the opening act.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be in this case. Anyway, we'll be back in a little bit with our picks for Wii U ports we want to see come to the Switch. Okay, everybody, we are back, and we're going to go through this kind of quickly, but we'll see. We'll see what we get into here. This could end up being a long podcast. But this, our main event here is there's been a lot of Wii U games that have been ported to the Switch lately, including new Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe. That's the most recent one. But, of course, we had Captain Toad. We had Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. We had Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. And I think there's been one or two others that are thrown in there as well. But there's always a lot of games that from the Wii U that people want ported, or maybe because they didn't get to play them, or maybe they just want to play them again, but for whatever reason, people want them, and I think we want some of them too. So we're going to go through, each one of us is going to pick which, if we could only have one game from the Wii U's library, remaining library, ported over to the Switch, what would it be? All right, so Rick, this was... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, before we start, at the end of the Wii U days, I mean, I know the Wii U is still technically alive, but right before the Switch came out, we released a list of the 25 best Wii U games as voted by our staff. So I'm going to quickly go over the list, and we're going to see how many of these games have been ported to the Switch. Affordable Space Adventures came in at number 25, ported.
That could not be ported, because it needs the gamepad.
Yeah.
Severed, ported.
Yep.
Hyrule Warriors, ported.
Ported. Yeah, you forgot about that one. Yeah.
Runbow, ported. Lego City Undercover. I can't remember.
Ported. Yeah, I get ported. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
We're
on the top 20 here. Captain Toad Treasure Tracker.
Ported.
New Super Luigi U.
Ported.
Yep.
Ported.
New Super Mario Brothers U.
Same.
Obviously.
Yoshi's Woolly World.
No, but it went to 3DS, so kind of counts.
That's different,
but...
though. We're talking about going to Switch, so.
Axiom Verge?
Yes.
Yeah, it's on Switch.
Tokyo Mirage Sessions.
No, Reddit's SP. Upset about that. They want that game on
Some
Switch.
People want that one pretty bad.
Mario Kart 8?
Yep.
Xenoblade Chronicles X?
Nope, and thank goodness.
The Wonderful 101?
Nope.
No.
That one would be hard to do, too, because it kind of required the gamepad, although they could probably find ways around it.
Pokken Tournament?
Yes.
Yes, it did. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Far, out of the... So far, only three have not yet been ported. Well, four if you count Yoshi, but it, like you said, it's been ported to the 3DS. Pikmin 3?
No, yeah. that deserves it.
Super Mario Maker?
No.
No, but it that's. I'm thinking you're going to do a sequel to that. So
it's on the 3DS, too, though. Let's not forget. Yeah. Splatoon?
It got a sequel, pretty much a port. It's like
I wouldn't count that because it got Splatoon 2. So
yeah,
Bayonetta 2
got ported.
Shovel Knight.
Yep.
Yes.
Super Smash Bros. For Wii U.
And nobody got the new Smash.
It's got its new Smash. So
Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze.
Yep.
The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess High Definition.
No.
The Legend of Zelda The Wind Waker High Definition.
Nope. Yep. Love to see those though.
And the last game on the list, which of course made it number one on our list, Super Mario 3D World. So as you can see, most of the games on the list of the top 25 Wii U games ever released, according to the Goomba Stomp staff, I would say out of 25, I think 16 have been ported. Two games are available on the 3DS, and two of them are actually just remasters. So, which game do you guys... Now, here's the thing. Here's the game. Nintendo announces that they will only port one more game from the Wii U to Switch. Only one, and never ever port any more Wii U games to the Switch moving forward. Which game would you choose?
Isaac, let's go first with you.
Okay, easy. Super Mario 3D World. Yep. they already have the tech there because they ported Captain Toad. It's an amazing game. It's the in my opinion, best Mario platformer, 3D or 2D or 2.5D, which is what it is, ever made. It's got a great imaginative world, amazing music, an actually decent four-player mode. Just everything I love about it. And I played the port of Captain Toad on Switch, and it looked amazing. So
I would argue it has an amazing four-player mode. I actually finished this game multiplayer.
That's what I said. It actually has an amazing four-player mode.
Okay.
Yeah, it's great, because especially if you're going for 100%. And what I would also like to see, if they ported this to Switch, I want to see this game on 3DS, because they did it with Captain Toad, and we've seen Super Mario 3D Land on 3DS, so I'd like to see this game double ported, like Captain Toad was, to 3DS and to the Switch. I just think it would look amazing.
It is one of my favorite games of all time. It is hands down on my top three Mario games of all time. It was my pick for the best game released on the Wii U. I actually put it over the remasters of Zelda, only because they're remasters. Now, I'm not going to pick the same game as you, but before I choose, Patrick, Nintendo announces that they will only port one more game from the Wii U to Nintendo Switch, one and only, and then that is it. Which game would you choose?
Yeah, so I thought about this for a while, and I knew somebody was going to pick Super Mario 3D World, and I didn't want to go with that one. That's the obvious choice, I think, because that is the best game on that list. However, my pick is going to make somebody disagree, I think, slightly, and that would be Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Oh my gosh.
I want to see that, because I was so disappointed by Xenoblade Chronicles 2 that I so preferred X. Like, had such a better time with X. That's such a better game. It's got a world that feels all together instead of disjointed like Chronicles 2 has, where you're fast traveling from area to area. Xenoblade Chronicles X is one massive world. It's got an amazing storyline. No, I'm kidding. It is terrible.
I'm about to go off the handle there.
It is a terrible story. But
the story is abominable.
I don't care about story, and I don't care about how the voice acting to me is hilarious, and whatever that Topo, whatever his thing was, that little round peanut or potato thing. I found him to be so off the wall that it was kind of funny. It was ridiculous.
I admit I am not objective. I have a personal vendetta against this game, because when they announced it in January 2013 at one of the first Nintendo Directs, it might have been the first one, I was so hype. I bought a Wii U to play this game. I had it pre-ordered, right? I love the original Xenoblade. I hated this game. Oh my gosh, the story was so bad. That's the reason I played the original Xenoblade. The story was so bad.
I loved
the hated all the characters. The world was great.
It's
yeah.
a massive world where you've got a even the city alone is just enormous. Yeah.
Except for and that soundtrack. Oh my god.
Yeah, and there's lots of different people you can recruit. I love the mech thing that comes in like 30 hours into the game. All of a sudden, just completely changes because you've got mechs, and the way it changes is awesome. I love the way the world is set up. The world is just set up so much better, and the combat, to me, felt better than in Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I liked the combos better in X. I could sit there and grind forever and have a good time in X, and I did much of the time.
Yeah,
and I never felt frustrated or like I wasn't getting grinding out levels in Xenoblade Chronicles 2 was such a chore. It just made it ridiculous. I actually enjoyed the grinding in 1, and I enjoyed exploring the different parts of the world and mapping the whole place out. Mapping in 1, like I said, the world there is disjointed. You have to fast travel from area to area. There isn't a whole big world. It's not interconnected in the way that, you know, that a big role-playing world would be normally. So I hated that about it. And whatever, like I say, I don't care about story. You're right, it's terrible. And all the voice acting is like some of the worst ever.
Because the voice acting for the original Xenoblade Chronicles was surprisingly good, right? To be like a British-focused voice acting cast, it wasn't bad. It was pretty decent.
Yeah.
Chronicles X was like some of the worst like anime dub VA from the 1990s that I've ever heard. Yeah, oh my gosh.
It's truly awful. But as a game,
it was fine. It was a game. It was fine. I love the combat. The exploration was kind of cool. But I could only make it so long without a good story because that's why I played those sort of games, right? Like you said, the combat's fine.
Like I play them for the epic moments, right? Like role playing games, you're supposed to be epic, and there are some epic vistas in Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Oh, definitely.
I did not get that from Chronicles 2. I did not feel nearly as much that it had an overall sense of just amazingness. When you first go into the desert in X and there's the giant spaceship that's crashed into the ground there, my goodness, that is just a glorious shot. It lends the entire world an amazing feeling. And I was amazed by 2.
That game could use the extra horsepower by the Switch, too, really effectively. Yeah. Those beautiful vistas and everything like you were talking about. I'm not objective about it. It's a decent game. I just absolutely hate it because of what it... I waited for 3 years for it, and I didn't like it. So.
That's my pick. Rick, what are you going with?
Okay, so my number one pick would have been Super Mario 3D World, but it's already been chosen. My number two pick would have been Xenoblade Chronicles X because
really?
I haven't played it. Well, because I didn't play it, right? So like the thing is from
good for you.
This is me being selfish, right? From the perspective of me being selfish and thinking only of myself, I would clearly choose the game that I haven't played as opposed to buying a game again for the second time that I've already played and finished, right? So that would be my second pick. You've already picked it. My third, now, if I could cheat, I would just say I would want Nintendo to release a bundle of all of the Zelda games in one, which includes Wind Waker and Ocarina of Time and Twilight Princess, and then I would just get the two Zelda games that were released on the Wii U, the remastered versions, within that bundle. That would be my dream pick, right?
Yeah.
And honestly, they should do it. They should just release this one massive bundle. I don't care if it costs like $100. Put all the games in there. Have a nice physical copy with an instruction booklet, the original Zelda map, etc., etc. Do it, Nintendo. People will buy it. It would sell it. You know, Breath of the Wild is still one of the top selling games of 2018, even this year. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's me kind of cheating. Now, if I do not cheat, I would have to fall on my third pick, which is Tokyo Mirage Sessions #FE, if only because also much like Xenoblade Chronicles X, I haven't played this game, and this is a game that really, really interested me, but it came out at, I think it came out the year right before like the Switch got released,
right?
2016, right at the end.
Yeah,
it came out right at the end of the Wii U's life cycle,
and this is a game they unveiled in 2013, and so it took it, you know, that long to get out of that development.
Unfortunate release time for that game, and I've heard a lot of good things about it. That was actually going to be my third pick as well. I debated going with that one, but I knew Isaac hated Chronicles X, so I had to.
Well, here's the thing. So the reason why I would want Super Mario 3D World ported to the Switch is because I think it's just one of the greatest games ever made, and I want more people to actually have a chance to play it. The reason why I would want Xenoblade Chronicles X ported to the Switch is because I just haven't played it. Same with Tokyo Mirage Sessions. But the thing about this game is I think a lot of people haven't played it also. And I think it deserves the love. And from what I hear, from what I've read, from what I've seen on like YouTube and what I've been told, it's an incredible game that merges two of Japan's biggest RPG franchises, Fire Emblem and Shin Megami, whatever you call it, Tensei.
Shin Megami Tensei.
SMT, yeah. That's what I said, whatever. SMT merges SMT and Fire Emblem. And both of those franchises right now have a huge following. Fire Emblem's found a huge following here stateside. And I hear that much like a lot of these Atlas RPG titles, it's a kind of like a slog for like the first 2 to 5 hours. But once you get past the opening, apparently the game's just fantastic. It has crazy like Japanese pop music. It's got a ton of charismatic characters, including some of your favorite characters from the Fire Emblem series. This is a game that I think would be in Nintendo's best, like it would benefit Nintendo if they ported this game, because I think this, first of all, I think it would sell really well.
I think so too, because there's not a bunch of big budget RPGs on the Switch right now.
Yeah, I feel like it's too niche though to sell really well in terms of Switch.
Oh, well, sorry, but when I say sell really well, I mean sell really well for that kind of like niche market. But I think
it doesn't have to do gangbuster business.
But I think it will. I think it would do really, really good, and I think it would also help with the Fire Emblem series. I know that the series is already popular as hell, and I think that they can find a way to sort of merge this with Super Smash. Like if that means giving us eventually a DLC character, or put the soundtrack into Super Smash with the DLC character in a stage, that'll be fantastic. And it would help boost the popularity of this game and or just add spirits. I think this game would be a fantastic port. And in all honesty, I just read a list of 25 games, right? And of the list of 25 games, almost more than half of the list has been ported to the Switch already. This would have been my number one pick. And I said this, like, I think when the Switch first got released, we had a very similar talk spot here on the podcast. We're like, what game would you want to see ported? And this is my pick back then, because I was like, no one's played this game. No one on our podcast has played this game. And it would make sense. It would, like, if this game got ported, no one would probably even know it's a ported game. Like, people wouldn't even realize, because most people don't even know this game exists. It would feel like it's a brand new, a new release.
Yeah, and it's a pretty game. And I think that goes a long ways towards selling something these days. The fans will like it. I've heard a lot of calls for this one. So, as Isaac, you said you had as well. And it looks good. It's a gorgeous looking game, and that's going to draw in people who haven't heard of it.
If the PS4 has Persona 5, the Switch would have this game. This would be their Persona 5.
Yeah.
I don't see maybe it's because I don't personally like this style of game, but I don't really see the mass appeal of it as much. Especially when they have other games that I think if they ported would be like Mario Maker, for example. They could just port the original Mario Maker and it would sell like a ton of copies. They wouldn't have to make a Mario Maker and just add some DLC in and call it good. And I think that would be like your heavy seller out of this list.
Well, for sure.
But I mean, I think they're going to do sequels.
The reason why I didn't pick Super Mario Maker, there's two reasons. Number one is because I love Super Mario Maker, but to me, like, that's the game. But that's the game that justifies holding on to my Wii U. It's like that game was released on the 30-year anniversary of Super Mario Brothers. That game is special to the Wii U, and I feel like if there's one game that the Wii U should be allowed to hold on to exclusive, it should be Super Mario Maker. Like, I know that sounds really stupid, but like the thing is, like, when you think of every single console, like every single console has at least that one game that's only available in whatever form on that system, right? And I feel like that is like the Wii U's baby. And I feel like, I know it's available on the 3DS, but it's kind of like a somewhat different version.
Yeah, it's completely like stripped up.
And
all
I
kind of
feel like I wouldn't want it ported. Like, I would want, like,
it'll be an inferior version if it's ported.
It's a collector's item. Like, to me, that's a collector's item. Like, in 20 years from now, you know, I look back at my collection, I got Super Mario Maker and the Wii U, and that's going to be a game that's going to be impossible to find or play.
Yeah, and that's the best version of that game. There's no way to make it for the Switch that's better than the Wii U, because the gamepad was made for something like that. It was made for the gamepad, and the Switch, for its touchscreen functionality, is still not the gamepad.
It's got very different input, and it wouldn't be as precise when you're talking about, like, even if you had it in handheld mode, putting down all the blocks and everything. I still think they're either getting a sequel or a port of this game. Like, there's no way Nintendo's giving up on it.
Yes.
It sold pretty, pretty well. It's very popular. I love this game. Put, like, 350 hours into it. It's great.
Well, but you know what? So, if Nintendo really want to push Labo, they can release some sort of, like, Labo kit in which you build a Wii U pad. and you use that Wii U pad to play Super Mario Maker on your Nintendo Switch. It'll be like a 2-for-1 bundle, and it'll help push Labo.
They should just get rid of old Wii U pads and find something to make them compatible with the Switch. That's all. Make them another controller. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'd love to see a sequel, but I would, you know, they're going to have to figure out how it's gonna control.
If anybody can do it, they can do it, I think.
Yeah, the drag and drop for the gamepad is just too... I mean, that's why it also, like, it's fine on 3DS. You can't do the new Super Mario Brothers stuff and, you know, got rid of the functionality of some of the online stuff. But at least the drag and drop worked to you know, the same way.
Yeah, they did a good... decent job porting it, I think.
Yeah, but you can't do that with the Switch. You're not going to bust out your stylus on your Switch. Like
it's they could. I've heard people talk about them bundling it with a capacitive touchscreen stylus, which would alleviate a lot of those problems. Of course, you got the digital version. What you can do about that? But I don't know. I still think it's gonna happen somehow. They'll figure it out somehow. Well, it's too much of a cash cow.
I would prefer to have a sequel, not a port. Yeah, because like I said, for me, that's agree. The game that makes the Wii U special. It's the Wii U's baby. And Like, if Breath of the Wild didn't get released on the Switch on the same day as it got released on the Wii U, then I would say that would be, like, the Wii U's baby. But unfortunately, I mean, you could argue that Super Mario 3D World is the Wii U's baby, but, like...
It's going to get ported. It's going to get ported.
Yeah, that one I have to think of the high chance of getting
ported. If they do not port that game, it is a major loss for them financially because they would just make so much money. I mean, Mario Kart still sells. So they released their sales figures.
Yeah, I saw that.
So top selling games for Nintendo, top selling games of 2018, period, no matter which console, Super Mario Odyssey, Breath of the Wild, and Mario Kart are all in the top 20. And of course, top 5 for Nintendo.
Yep. And Smash was number 1 for Nintendo this year, and it only came out in December.
not only was it number 1 for Nintendo, it's the number 1 selling game released
in December.
Yeah, it's the number one selling platform exclusive in dollar sales in history.
In history. Beating out Halo, Grand Theft Auto.
Halo Reach from 2010. So I think for an opening month or something, I forget what exactly. It was really specific, but it was actually kind of impressive. So I was pretty happy to see that.
It was a console exclusive. It was the best selling game in 1 month for a console exclusive of all time. So it doesn't matter, you know, which is incredible. I can't believe, honestly, that Smash sold that well. I know it's a big seller, but my God,
The question is, do you guys think it's going to outsell Brawl? Because Brawl is the top selling.
Yeah, Brawl is very popular. So I'm very impressed.
But Brawl was very popular, but let's not forget that Brawl was released on the Wii.
At the height of Wii.
Sold 120 million units, I believe.
Yeah, it did.
So like, it had a bigger install base, but here's the thing. I, honest to God, and I said this before the Switch got released, and I remember John McCormick thought I was, like, on crack. I said that the Switch would have the chance, a very, very good chance of outselling the Wii within, like, 5 years. And from what I've been told and from what I've been reading, I think the Switch would have sold about 35 million units by the end of year 2, which is March 7th.
Well, we'll see. I mean, that's an incredible achievement if they do. For 2 years to sell 35 million units would be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, they're sticking to their habit right now of releasing a dud console and then an extreme hit. I'm enjoying it right now, but I'm not looking forward to Switch 2 if that's going to be the case again.
It'll be Switch U.
Oh my gosh, man. Too soon.
Is it just an attachment? Can't wait to have those discussions.
All right.
So that'll do it for our porting segment. When we come back, we're going to do a quick little roundup of Nintendo's latest Indie Direct. All right. We'll be back in a bit. Hey, everybody, we're back. We're going to do a really quick roundup of a new direct. Well, I guess it's kind of a direct. It wasn't really a direct. It was just a something that Nintendo did for their nindies.
It wasn't a direct at all. Like there was no one there on camera to address the audience. It was just a voiceover. It was basically just one long trailer
with some narration to it. It was kind of a hybrid between a trailer and a direct. Anyway, they dropped basically, I think it was 9 new indie games, and then they of course promoted some big ones from last year as well. Hollow Knight. So we're going to go through and sort of talk about that. Okay. First of all, Isaac, you didn't actually see the trailer, so you're going to have to just comment on our comments.
Okay. That's but fine.
Rick, what did you think of the trailer? Did you see anything that really stood out to you?
Well, so the thing is, Nintendo sends out these press releases daily, and they always send out a press release after a quote-unquote Nintendo Direct, or in this case it's just one long gigantic 50-minute trailer promoting these new games. And the press release they sent is like really, really short. Like someone got really lazy this week, so I don't have much information.
The normal one,
right? But the normal one usually has like it has like
a list,
one or two paragraphs that sort of give information about each game or announcement they made.
Yes,
in this case you have like two paragraphs for all of the announcements. But anyways, so of the games, the thing is, it's not the game that impressed me the most when I was watching it, but I've just heard great things about it. It's CrossCode.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I mentioned that.
It's basically a retro-inspired action RPG. It was already released on PC. Everyone was raving about it. Apparently, this version has like extra bonus material exclusive to the Switch. Like I said, everyone I know that's played this game says it's one of the best indie games in recent memory, so that's the game to look out for. But the game that I was most excited for is actually, I think it's called Inmost by Chucklefish.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2D open world game. No, it's not a 2D open world game. It's a story-driven puzzle platformer.
Yes, puzzle platformer, yeah.
That has like this beautiful art style.
Yeah, it's kind of a 16-bit sort of art style, but it's got kind of a... I don't know why I have to say this, but maybe because I just played it, but it's got kind of a Hollow Knight aesthetic to it, but in a 16-bit version.
Right, I kind of thought the same thing, too. The visuals were sort of similar to Hollow Knight, but in terms of like the color palette, it reminded me of games like Inside, mm-hmm. or any of the games Play Dead Studios.
A lot of use of light and shadow.
Exactly. Yeah, kind of like reminiscent of film noir.
Except it doesn't have the attitude of film noir, I don't think, but it does that edge. This seems more fantasy-based, kind of like fairy tale-ish.
Anyhow, that's the game that impressed me the most, but the game that I'm most excited for is Goat Simulator The Goaty. And now here's the thing. Of course, I've played Goat Simulator. I've had a blast playing that game, but this is Goat Simulator The Goaty with, like, extra bonus material and different, like, types of versions of Goat Simulator that you can play. Like the whole trailer just was bonkers. Like I want to see Mr. Goat have his own Hollywood movie. Like, I mean, you did you see the trailer? There's one point where he kidnaps a giraffe and he's driving and he's like a helicopter the giraffe is dangling out of the helicopter, hanging for its life. They had like an ostrich driving a scooter. Just crashing into
stuff. A lot of physics-based stuff. I remember seeing video of flying, Goat Simulator.
The goat was flying a spaceship like Star Fox. It was insane. It was like Star Wars with goats. This game looks bonkers. It looks so much fun. Have you played the original?
No, I've watched people play the original. I think I watched some Let's Plays. I don't think that physics-based games like that, it's kind of a playground for the most part. I know that there were achievements that you could get and stuff like that, but I'm not really sure there was any objective to the original Goat Simulator, at least when I watched the Let's Play. I think they cut a great trailer, but I don't think that that's the game for me.
I honestly think it's like every so often I write about marketing and games, and I think I'm going to write a piece about the actual trailer, or maybe I'm just going to do a monthly column where I discuss the best marketing for video games each month, because I thought the trailer was just brilliant. I mean, that's the way to sell a game. Yeah,
it was. It had me wanting to play Goat Simulator until my brain said, "Wait a second, you've seen Goat Simulator. Don't worry. Don't." Get too ahead of yourself here. That game's not.
But here's the thing, though. This game is a ton of fun to play. Like, I've watched people play it on YouTube, but I've also played it myself, and I just could not stop laughing playing this game. And I know the original came out like 7 years ago or something.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah,
it's been a while.
So those were the three standouts for me.
All right, so I mean, I remember Inmost is definitely on my radar now. Like that one, okay, I thought puzzle platformer, my favorite genre of all. So I'm definitely going to look out for that one. I was curious about Wargroove because it definitely has, I've been getting into Fire Emblem lately, but it has that similar vibe to, oh my God, what was the Intelligent Systems
Advance
Game
Wars.
Boy? Advance Wars! God! Yeah, so it has that.
That's why I'm in this section here, so I can tell you stuff like that.
Exactly. And I did like Advance Wars way back. I haven't played a game like that in a long time. It was giving me that vibe. I'm going to keep an eye on it. People seem to like that game and think that it's a proper successor to Advance Wars. So I'll at least, like I say, keep an eye on it. Other than that, I'm a big SteamWorld guy. Like, I liked both SteamWorld Digs a lot. And I was a fan of Heist, even though I don't think it's, like, better than the Digs. I thought it was a really well-designed, strategy game, turn-based strategy game. And it was one of the rare exceptions that I make when it comes to turn-based strategy, because I don't normally play that genre. But I thought they did a good job. I'm not sold on SteamWorld Quest. As much as I want to like a new SteamWorld game, and I think Image and Form does amazing games, I just don't know if a card-based, turn-based RPG is going to be the thing for me. I knew they were on the precipice of announcing something new, a new SteamWorld-type game. I'm not so excited that it was an RPG, to tell you the truth. It stands out for me just because it was a little disappointing for me. Now, that they probably made a great game for all I know, and who knows, maybe as it gets closer to release time, I'll soften my stance on this one a little bit, but I couldn't get excited about it, which was disappointing for me because I really wanted to. But other than that, there wasn't really a whole lot that I thought was great. I didn't care much for Double Kick Heroes, the metal-based
shooter game. Kick Heroes reminds me, like, okay, when I saw the footage for Double Kick Heroes, I had the same impression as when I saw the footage for Travis Strikes Again. Like, it has this cool concept. It's got that rock punk sort of, like, attitude feel to it. Like, it's hard to explain, but it feels like one of those mid-90s games that's all about, like, attitude and being super cool, but the game itself is kind of, like, poorly designed or sloppy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically like a retro-inspired shooter.
I mean, sort of. It's an interesting concept that, like you say, probably isn't going to turn out all that well. And after being burned by Travis, there's no way I'm going to check out any game from now on that has attitude. Like that, forget that. I'm going back to traditional stuff here. Forget these like punk games.
I know, like when you see the cutscenes and you have those animated characters that look like punk rockers that came out of some like Marvel comic book, that's kind of cool. But when we see the actual game footage, it kind of, it doesn't look fun to play.
Yeah, and Forager was another game that they highlighted that looked like kind of a cross between Minecraft and Zelda, and, whatever. I mean, it looks fine. It looks playable, but it also didn't really inspire anything out of me. I will say, we've talked about this before, I can go back and forth sometimes between that 16-bit aesthetic, 16-32-bit aesthetic, and you can get kind of burnout on it, and I'm in the point right now where anything that looks like that, I don't really want to play. I want to play stuff that has a little more... that little more modern look to its visuals, a little cleaner look. So the pixelated stuff I'm not getting into. In most, it is pixelated, but I do like the atmosphere around it, so I'm going to at least keep that one on my radar. But yeah,
I think I'm also burnt out on these like retro-inspired video games, because like as amazing as some of these indie games are, like you talked about Hollow Knight and all these amazing like games released on a Switch.
And Hollow Knight's not pixelated, it's just beautiful.
Okay, well, whatever, bad example, but the point I'm trying to make here is there's just all these retro inspired like 8-bit 16-bit style games that have been released on the Switch lately, which are amazing, but that's why I went out and bought Super Mario Party and a new Mario Deluxe U, because I just needed a change of pace, and it's gotten to the point where I've been playing more Xbox, guys, which is I've had the Xbox One since launch, and I never touched the system, and now I'm playing Xbox all the time because I'm kind of burnt out on those games, and I need a break. So, yeah, so, like, when I watch this Nindies, whatever you want to call it, like, Spotlight, I wasn't as excited as I was, say, like, when I watched an Indie Spotlight back in 2017, because there's just too many at this point. So I might pick up one of these games, most likely the Goat Simulator game, and play it and maybe talk about it next week. But if I wasn't doing a Nintendo podcast, I might actually skip on all of them except for whatever it's called, the one we just talked about,
Inmost.
Inmost, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only one that I think I can definitely say is on my radar. The rest of them, who knows what comes up. As it gets closer to release, with some of them, maybe we'll be...
I should mention that CrossCode apparently has a lot of... the people who have played it and love the game, they compare it to the classic Zelda games. And apparently, if you love classic Zelda games, it's the game for you. So...
You know. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, and there'll be other things that come up. I mean, these are the ones that Nintendo has chosen to highlight. Nintendo has been hit or miss sometimes with what they choose to highlight. Not everything that they highlight turns out to be a great game, but sometimes they do turn out to be some of the best ones on the system. So they do stand out from the indie crowd. I'm sure there'll be other things that come along in the indie market that are actually, you know, better than maybe anything on here, but we'll see. So some of these games could shape up to be great games. I don't know, but so far, like, it was sort of I wouldn't say it was underwhelming because I wasn't expecting a whole lot, but I didn't really see anything that I thought this is a must play for me. Like I say, Inmost is the one that perked me up the most, but yeah, other than that, it was fine. I'm looking more forward to this. Is a year of big releases for on the Switch, as far as I'm concerned, more so than the indies. There's so many AAA games that are coming
out. Like, you know, Rick doesn't like to pretend that Metroid Prime 4 is not coming out this year, but yeah, everybody knows it is coming out this year.
Yes, a trailer is coming out this year.
No, the game on a second. I'm calling it. Hold on a second there, Cowboy. You didn't listen to our podcast last week, did you?
No, I didn't. I apologize.
You should maybe go listen to that podcast, because first of all, Kyle was on, and Kyle's an amazing guest. He was so fun to have on. And second of all, I had some words about Metroid Prime 4. That was a really good podcast. I recommend you listen to it. And we talked about the possibility of Metroid Prime 4 being released in 2018, and the possibility is very high.
Rick is now on the Metroid Prime 4 bandwagon, Isaac.
Okay, because of course I thought it was going to come out last year, but I'm always the optimist when it comes to that. Can't wait for it to come out, honestly.
It's going to be the Xenoblade Chronicles X of Metroids.
Don't you dare. No way. No, I've given up on... No, we've already had that with Other M. Thankfully, I got Other M for like $3 when I played it, so I wasn't too disappointed. But no, we're not having another bad Metroid. We already dealt with a 7-year gap because the other one was so bad.
So that'll wrap it up for today. This was a long podcast, but we had a lot to say. All right, so Isaac, where can we find you online?
At Goomba Stomp. I'm not on social media, so there you go.
Go check out Isaac's articles on Goomba Stomp. He has written for us for what is it going on 2.5-3 years now already?
It's
how long?
3 years
is
in February. Been? 3 years. Yeah.
3 years, man. 3 years.
Long time.
We launched a site November, December.
Or December, yeah.
December 15th, to be exact, and he started writing for us 2 months later.
Yeah, February. Yep. Paper Mario, first thing I wrote about.
Been a while. I remember reading Isaac's application.
Do you really?
I remember it clearly.
Yeah, Rick,
I do,
Rick was
actually.
Like...
I actually, you know what I remember? I remember reading your email, the original email, not the actual, not like the samples that you sent, but the cover letter.
Whoever emailed me back was like, you know, I've been working in this business for a long time. If you're not serious, it doesn't go well. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy is super serious. It might have been Rick. It might have been you.
I think that was Rick.
I was like, oh my gosh. Like, this guy takes like super seriously. I'm like, okay, boss, you know, I am going to
take it seriously. Hold on a second. In my defense, okay, we get per month, we might get, I would say, 20 to 50 emails from people that want to write for us. Yeah. And it's really time consuming to go through those applications. And what people don't understand is a lot of times we actually go through these conversations back and forth, emailing back and forth, sending them the guidelines and getting them started and setting up an account, all this other crap. And also like getting them on like Workplace and all this other stuff. It's really time consuming. And this is something I learned a long time ago back when we were running Sound Insight. For every 10 writers you get, 9 will work out, meaning that, one out of the 10 will work out, meaning that one writer will eventually write articles, publish it on your site. And out of like every, say, 10 writers that actually sort of like work out, like of the initial, like, okay, say you get 100 writers, right? 10 will work out. And of those 10, only 2 will stick around for like longer than 6 months.
Yeah, most people write a couple of articles and then they're kind of gone.
And they're gone, yeah. It's people don't realize, like, we actually had this guy, we had so many bad submissions this week. We had this guy who submitted his first article, and I had to reject it, and I always feel bad rejecting it, but he basically wrote this article touching upon, and Patrick, you read it, it's like the most controversial topics in the video game industry happening right now. Like, we're talking about like multiple topics, right? Everything from like unions to microtransactions, you name it. and it was like 700 words. It was like, just to tackle one of those topics, you got to do your research, and you got to like dish out an article that's at least 1,500 words. Like, it read like the first paragraph of like a Wikipedia page.
Yeah, or even a long comment on a post. It didn't really have much to say. So if you do want to apply to us or anybody else, I recommend sticking to one subject and exploring that one subject as thoroughly as you can.
Yeah,
so, and just come up with a thesis. You know, it's like when you go to college, they want you to write your essays with a thesis. You know, come up with three main points, go through those points one by one, and then sum everything up at the end. You can't go wrong with sort of that classic format.
Yeah, and I've always found something you're passionate about writing too. Yes. Because if I had to write about other things like all time, like if I had to write about like, I don't know, Sony all the time, I had no way I would write as much as I do.
Oh God, who could? I don't understand how anybody can.
But that's the thing. Like you mentioned passion. A lot of people, they don't actually have a passion for writing. Like what I realized is that they just want to become sort of like internet famous. They want to have like a following. And that's the problem. We get too many people like that. They don't really want to write. And you could tell, like we had this one guy, and I should send you the email. It was the worst application ever. So first of all, not only was it poorly written, but his introduction and everything, he was so cocky. And he was like, I want to write a column for you guys. And I'm going to go through the list on Metacritic for the 100 worst rated games. And I'm going to review them and talk about why they're so crap. And then I was like, first of all, buddy, you haven't even played all 100 games. And he said he was going to do it within 30 days. He hasn't even played these games and he's going to review them. And then he was sending us the reviews and like reading his copy. First of all, it was like poorly written.
They were about 300 words.
It was 300 words, cussing left and right. And he clearly had no knowledge of what the game was about. Like he was just basically going off of what people say on Reddit. Like his whole entire review, which is 300 words for a game he hasn't played, was based off of comments he read on Reddit. That's not someone who has a passion for writing. That's just someone that wants to be heard on some kind of platform because he doesn't have enough Twitter followers.
he was cracking jokes. He wanted to be an entertainer, not a writer. And that's another thing. Like I hate to inform most of you, and I consider myself in this as well, but most people are not entertainers. And so what you think is funny when you're writing often is not. And it can be embarrassingly bad at times. We've certainly seen that before. So try to be sincere instead of cracking wise. Some people can get away with it because some people are very, very witty. I do not count myself among those people. But
yeah, me either. The way I look at it is this. So if you want a good example of how to write a good article, go to The Economist, theeconomist.com. They write about a bunch of different stuff. They write these short, really good quality, high quality articles. And that's what I base my writing style off of, is sort of like the way they write. Very quick, very pithy, very, very high quality, but it gets the meat of the subject, you know, within 800 words. And I think that's just a good guideline for people.
Yeah. Inject your find ways to put your personality in it, but don't worry about telling jokes. There's a difference between putting humor in something and telling jokes. Don't tell jokes, because you're probably not a comedian. You're not as funny as maybe your friends think you are. Anyway, that's going to sound bad. None of us are, though, so.
Maybe I can't write an article about the Switch U and get a bunch of laughs out of it.
Yeah, exactly. So speaking of internet famous, though, Rick, where can we find you online?
GoombaStomp.com, Twitter. I run the official Twitter account for GoombaStomp, Facebook, you name it, we're everywhere. But yeah, visit our website, support us, because we had a really rough week. We kept getting hacked. We almost lost the whole entire website. It took me 8 days, 32 phone calls to customer service, over 25 hours spent on hold during that week, and I would say about 25 hours that went into trying to fix the site and rebuild it and save it. It was a nightmare. It's a lot of hard work. So yeah, support our website.
Yeah, and if you go on and read some of the articles, like leave a comment. We love getting comments. Don't worry about anything being too incisive or whatever. We just love proof that somebody actually read one of these things.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, the more incisive, the more divisive, the better. I love those sort of comments.
Yeah, so. I mean, anything you want to do. If you want to argue, that's fine. Or if you just want to say great article or, you know, whatever. We just appreciate that somebody read the thing. So you can, of course, find me online at GoombaStomp.com. Usually writing under the Sword Cinema section. I just reviewed the new movie Glass recently. That was my last thing. Also, you can find me on Twitter at Sorted Cinema. So if you ever wanted to talk movies, please shoot me some kind of message or respond to it at Sorted Cinema. Follow us there. And that should about do it. So next week, we'll be back with some NFL stuff. And until then.